Is it working now? Yes, it is. 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 Is it Okay, I'll stop that, because that was like a cool DJ riff going on there. Maybe it makes the start of the lecture more interesting if we have, like, you know, dance party music. But so today we're doing interest curves. So I'll get that up. I was just looking at my YouTube analytics information and going lifetime, because we'll be showing you some stuff on interest curves, and one of the neat things in YouTube is that there's a tool which allows you to look at how people are watching your YouTube videos that you create, right? This is to the creator of the video, so it's not something that everyone can go and have a look at, but apparently my machine has crashed on that. Seems not to be responding now. Okay, we'll just come back to that later. Right, okay, so I also put the link to these, so you could, if you're online, if you're streaming online, sometimes you want to go forward and back in the slides, so I've got the link to the slides so you guys can look at that, and the link to the stream for people who aren't here, which we seem to have fewer than we normally do, possibly because of the rain. And this fact, we stream. Now, and this is kind of an interesting kind of self-reflection about the experience of coming here and being with me in the room versus watching it online. Right? So you guys now have the choice of sitting in your comfy chair at home, bringing up the computer, and just watching the lecture either synchronously or asynchronously. For synchronous watching, I'm actually wanting to kind of add some tools to allow you guys to ask questions. So if I go like this and go into presenter view with questions, let's see if I can make that work. Right, so presenter view with questions. If you are streaming now, right, so if there's people at home streaming, one of the experiences that I can provide those people is the ability to ask questions. Now, by having that start new question session, you see on the Google slide, we now have the Google /slide/KJ24HC. So anyone here can also join on there, and you can type in your questions for me in here. Which means if you're on the stream, you could also sit at home, type in the questions, and they'll pop up, and you can ask questions from home, or you can ask questions here, right? Yes. Yes, they are. Okay, so I've done this before, right? So I actually have a questioning tool that I also run for first year, and then I had a separate tool to this. And as you see, Anonymous, just testing this, just sent an anonymous question. Trolling, right? When we give people anonymity, some of you can be offensive. And the answer is, well, you know, nothing offends me, so I don't mind whatever people put in there, right? I will generally move it to the side, and I will monitor it, and then try to give you guys, because other people might be offended by what people put there. So I can moderate a bit and take things away, and I can minimize it so you guys don't see it until we... can you see this? Yes, we can see this, Anonymous. You can also do it like directly and actually log in and have your name there, right? I have an anonymous question system. There are some people who do abuse that and will say, you know, just be rude because they can. But to some extent, if I don't react to it and there isn't anything that offends me, it's kind of, well, what would be the point, right? Because, you know, you're not going to shock me or get a rise out of me or put me off my stride or anything. So, you know... I'll try and avoid showing it, you know. unless there's a reason for it. But we'll put the slide there, and I'll jump back every now and again and see what the remote questions or the questions in the class. Right? This also allows you to put your hand, like, ask a question that you might be embarrassed to ask, or that you, as a non-native English speaker, potentially don't have, like, initially the words to feel strong enough to be able to kind of say them without stumbling, and so you just type them out, and then you can think about it and get your question right. Right? So it gives more tools that way. So today's interest curves. So we've been talking about experiences, and today we're talking about how experiences change over time. Okay, so you guys have been working on your games, and I'm going to be talking about the submission. Hopefully we can work out how Blackboard does its submission. I haven't... Ah, see? Yep, he's found the stream. Excellent. But yeah, hopefully then we don't get that hip-hop startup. Interest curves don't just talk about an experience right now. They talk about how that experience evolves over time, how it changes. And they look at, you know, what is the start of the experience like? How does that experience get maintained? Changes in pace. So, you know, some days are slow, some days are really exciting. And, you know, what does the end of an experience look like? Now, you can use this kind of analysis of experience over time for any activity, right? You could do it for relationships. You can talk about, you know, the honeymoon period, that startup period of the relationship, the maintenance of a relationship, and then how that relationship ends, right? You could look at how, what kind of engagement you had and how much engagement you had. But you could do it for a game, you could do it for a movie, you could do it for a book. This flow of interest and engagement that you generally don't have a movie where you just, like, you know, the first scene is amazing, and the movie is amazing, 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 and then ends, right? And that's, it's unlikely that you have that experience. So usually as human beings, we have a limit to how long we can remain constantly engaged. Right? And so you get this ebb and flow that you get really engaged, and then you kind of have to back off and take some time out, and then you get engaged again. So you go up and down. We also talk about who is having the experience, right? So, and the culture and their expectations for that, right? So, one of the challenges of watching trailers for movies is that sometimes you get the sort of your expectations built up that it's going to be amazing, and the movie's only good, right? And you think, that wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. And then you have another movie, which is kind of you haven't heard anything about, you go to, and it's good, and you go, wow, that was a good movie. So your experience is very different, even though kind of the objective measure of what you thought of the movie, it was a good movie, is the same. The experience is still different. So the experience isn't kind of one-to-one with some kind of objective measure of the activity. So we also talk about, like, the general expectations you have. So what are the context that you're in? So a story is a type of experience, and we generally think of stories as following narrative structures, right? So there's a beginning, start, a middle, and an end, right? So there's some kind of flow. It's really annoying when a movie just stops at some point. Though, admittedly, it's something that in games sometimes you feel that. You've got a really good game, you're playing away, and then suddenly it ends. And it's like, oh, so they ran out of money. Sometimes movies feel that way as well. There are some movies where they seem to wrap everything up all suddenly at the end because they ran out of money to do things. But you can look at, within that story experience, what are the features? So what are the elements in the story? There are some characters, usually. We don't think of stories as... you don't think of the dictionary as a story, really. It's a collection of words in a book that you can read, but there aren't really main characters, and there's no kind of setup in the dictionary. There is kind of an introduction to what it is, but it's not really a story. So, and standard stories, and often we use movies because hopefully most of you have seen certain movies. Which movie should I, do you know Star Wars? You're happy with, like, Lord of the Rings? Titanic. Yeah, so Titanic, good standard story of, you know, who are the main characters? You've got Rose and Jack, Orlando Black. Rose and Jack, yeah, someone new. I'll never let you go, Jack. Really? Yeah. So you have main characters. You have all the circumstantial information, like what that they're traveling, what they're doing, what class they come from, where, how they meet, they're like kind of all of that intro bit. There's an inciting incident, and like depending on how you treat Titanic, it's kind of their meeting could be the inciting incident because, you know, that starts the whole love affair activity. And then you have some goals and some obstacles, right? So the ship's thinking's a pretty big obstacle, right? So, you know, that's a big problem. The goal would be to be together. You have a climax, the ship actually sinks and let go, and then the resolve is you see her as an old woman, I believe, if I remember rightly, talking about her life. So the Titanic would follow this relatively standard story structure. Not necessarily a happy boy meets girl, boy falls in love with girl, boy and girl live happily ever after. Doesn't kind of fit that model, but it still has kind of follows a lot of ancient theory, right? Now, we're computer science, and so I tend to sort of think that we need to act quickly because the world changes so quickly, right? So we're discussing including blockchain material in some of our courses, right? So because the whole cryptocurrencies, blockchain, Bitcoin, Ethereum is starting to kind of be a thing, so we should be teaching that to you. But we have to do that really, really right now. Some things, like stories and experiences, because they relate to you as human beings, your brains don't change as fast as technology does. So some of this stuff is still true. The way in which you can build a story, right? And the way in which you kind of build interest and build engagement up to there being some kind of climactic event in a story and then having a resolve and then you can leave. That's to do with the way our brain interprets things. Right? And so because our brain doesn't change massively every year, unlike mobile devices, we can take time and we can look back at things like Aristotle and traditional story analysis and talk about, well, how have we thought about engaging people in the past? Why is me talking to you engaging at all? Surely a book written in a much better font than I am could be just as engaging. So we've got to kind of unpack why different things are engaging and how they engage over time. So one tool we use is called an interest curve. Right? So you try and draw a curve of how engaging the activity is at a time. Right? So when I'm giving you a lecture, I actually surprisingly had quite a good hook at the start with my hip-hop interaction. I didn't know that was going to happen. That was an impromptu hook. But that's a nice kind of interesting uptake because you're all sitting here kind of getting a bit bored while I was sorting things out. And then I get a hook to bring in the engagement and then I start talking and you get less and less interested and some of you get up and leave. So I assume he just went to the toilet. But yeah, so you have kind of the curve goes down and then as a lecturer, sometimes, so my technique is that I have usually 5 or 6, well, depending on how long I've got. If it's a half-hour session, usually 2 or 3 longer sessions, 5 or 6 anecdotes that I keep available to me. That if I see you guys flagging, right, I see your heads are starting to drop or your eyes are getting a bit bored and kind of you're starting to stare at the wall or the ceiling instead of me, I will bring in something funny or humorous or different into the lecture to try and get your attention back on me, to try and get you interested again, right? I also do things like walk forward or walk strongly across the stage to get you to look at me again, right? And raise my volume or lower my volume, right? So I could also say, like, come in here and talk really softly and say, so what do you think of engagement? Right, because that if I talk softly now, unfortunately with a microphone, it's much harder to do that because a kind of microphone's shouting at you all the time. but by changing the way I'm interacting, I can try and modify the curve of your interest in the lecture. Because I know that some of this is going to be boring, right? Some of it's going to make you drift away a bit, right? So I have to have those kind of in the back anecdotes I can bring up and different techniques I use to talk to you. So I'm managing my interest curve in real time with you. When we record a lecture, I don't have an audience to record to, so I have to guess how engaged you are, which is why watching a stand-up comic is quite different to watching a TV show, right? Because a stand-up comic is working with the crowd. A TV program, sometimes they'll have a live audience there just to try and make sure the actors have some of that feedback so that they know where they should be raising interest and lowering interest, right? Because without that feedback, it's hard to know where you are in the curve. So we try and estimate engagement, and we try and modify it. So when we have a look at these curves, what do they kind of look like? Well, we mean, you know, we could have a curve that looked sort of up and down and up and down and up and down. So we could look at various instances where you might have, like, you're starting off with everything being normal, kid playing in his house, everything's normal, and then something terrible happens, and suddenly go, oh, what's happening, right? And then you go, oh, it's not that bad. And then, oh, actually, there are other things happening, and always resolve those, it's only a small crisis. And then there's a dip, and then into kind of, oh, yeah, things seem to be going reasonably well. And then it's, oh, okay, so he's actually having to solve a challenging problem. And yes, we think he succeeded, and we start going down in our interest. And then suddenly, oh, my God, he didn't kill the beast, it's still alive, and it comes back. And, you know, so the curve itself goes up and down, and people try and identify what changed at those points, right? What was it that changed people's engagement? Now, one way of doing this, and they do this in with some usability testing labs, and certainly in the US and in Europe, is you have cameras pointing at people's faces, and you try and read their engagement through their face, right? So, like, how excited they are. You put heart rate monitors on and galvanic skin response, and you measure their emotional responses, right? So you can try and see how excited they are, or if, you know, something that, like, raises their heart rate and stresses them, you can try and measure it. Most of the time, we don't have those labs, so we kind of have to guess and draw our curve. Now, what I was showing you in Google there is that, or than YouTube, is this is a YouTube retention graph. And I was at a conference on Friday, I don't know if any of you heard of this particular movie. There was a movie that was the script was written by an AI. Did you hear about that sci-fi movie? Completely bizarre sci-fi movie that was written by an AI. The director of that was speaking over in Lillehammer, and so I was also talking about AI with him. And he said that this graph, as not that individual graph, but this area of YouTube analytics, is the most significant change to narrative theory in the last 50 years, but no one's talking about it. Right? And that's because it's buried in the YouTube analytics. You have to go and hunt for it. And most people who are writing stories don't know enough of the tech to go and find it, right? So it's kind of a mismatch. Luckily, you guys understand, hopefully, enough about the tech, and we can show you where to find it. What it shows you here is, this is on the relative scale of active engagement over time. Now, if I actually take you to this particular YouTube video, and I'll see if I can get there without it breaking. So if I go to here, so this YouTube video, and I need to change to Game Technology Lab. So we have a Game Technology channel, and under Analytics, we have Audience Retention and Loading, and I click. So Marish, so you've had Marish in one lecture, he created a YouTube video for demonstrating a whole bunch of tools, and it's our most popular one. So it's had about 2,000 views, which is, like, not popular at all on YouTube, but it gave us some stats. So my internet... Ah, there we go. So it's this one on software testing for JUnit, AngularJS, Jasmine, Karma and Grunt, right? So this was a tool for doing that. So we have buried down here in your channel, in your analytics, in your audio retention, and then you have to go and select the particular one, and you have to go and say that you wanted lifetime. You can see here that this is the engagement with this particular video, right? So as you can see, if you said your interest curve was how many people are leaving and when they leave. So I'll stop him talking. There we go. So that was him playing the video. So you can see a lot of people leave in the first minute, right? Because, you know, they click on the link, they're trying to see what it is, and so it's not interesting to them, so they leave. And then you scroll down and saying, okay, so you're losing a lot, losing a lot, and losing a lot, and then you get down to kind of the 11% of people who are still watching, right? So these are people who knew what they were getting for and looking at it. And, you know, you lose a few of them, you lose a few of them, and then you get a wee uptick here, and then we get this odd uptick just here. It's people jumping forward to see what it's about. It's people going back and rewatching that particular bit, right? So they went, oh, that was interesting, or, oh, I missed that, and they go back, and so it gets an extra watch, right? So when we look at the relative audience figures, that bump in the centre there is... clicked on you. You didn't wake up. That bump is that big curve in the centre here, where it's saying, oh, you had much higher than average interest from your viewers in this area of your video. And yes, what you find is on movies, immediately after the climax with the murder mystery, you have the murder mystery climax, and then a whole bunch of people leave the video. Right? And you can do this with any video, right? You can do it with cute videos, with like your family videos. If you have more than about 40 or 30 odd views, once you've got less than 30 views, Google doesn't even bother to try and generate this because, you know, there's not enough data. But I can go to my YouTube channel, and I haven't been posting much of my kids recently, but, you know, I've got a couple of my kids, my kids' videos. So, like, Brenna and William in the cot was my kids when they were much younger playing in the cot. And so I can have a look at, not available before, okay. And so, I know your warning, data for the average pay views is not available. So, September 1st, 2012 was when they started recording this, right? So, this has only been for the last 5 years they've been recording this data. But here you can see I had, you know, a few people drop off, and it was reasonably good. This bit apparently was a bit boring for the people watching, and this bit was a bit more interesting, and then it was a bit more boring, and then it was kind of a bit more interesting at the end, right? So I could, in theory, oh, that's the overall. So this is just my two kids when they were much smaller in the cot. So apparently something quite interesting happened here. So apparently that was exciting. I'm not sure why that was exciting. And also it would appear that a bunch of people get to this point and they're watching Brenna and William playing, and then apparently what Brenna does now makes people leave. Okay, so that's mum coming in and taking the kids away. Right, apparently, that's boring. Right, obviously, that's the end of the and then people just leave after that, right? So apparently mum coming in is the trigger for people to stop watching the video. Okay.
Brenna, are you going to give William a kiss?
It's probably over now. Yeah, mum's going to stop fun things happening, yeah. So and I have a... well, most likely. So I'll just pause that. Yes, my kids play together a lot. But that kind of... being have that data, seeing the interest curve in an experience and having that kind of data, you can do the same thing for your game, right? So if you've got a game experience, you can look at when people jump in and out of your game experience, right? So they're playing your game. When do they quit? Why do they quit? What challenge did they just have? Right? And so when you look at the deep analytics for Halo... the Halo series. Halo does a whole bunch of analytics, machine visibility. So they show a whole bunch of information about where people get killed, how long they get through a level. So they can do a bunch of analytics over... okay, that's not what I was looking for. I'll find that link later and put it up on Blackboard. Where did my slides go? Nope. Okay. Did I just lose my slide? So understanding how people engage with your experience and allowing yourself to kind of guess and draw that line and say, okay, with my game, with my experience, with my web page, with my mobile experience, I'm going to try and work out how to engage people in these different ways. So hopefully... No, it did disappear. And I'm sorry, I must have just lost all those questions that people had posted. I'll present again. Sorry, people who had been posting questions. I obviously accidentally clicked out of the right place and did a search. So, yep, I'm going to have to start new. Sorry, there's a new thing to connect. Well, we just blanked out all those questions. So if you do have a question, you'll have to re-ask it. Okay, so I've got that curve. So interesting, like Mariusz must have been talking about a particularly useful tool during that middle section because that was more interesting than the rest of the video. So a good story curve will have a hook. It'll start up well. There'll be an increase with peaks. There'll be a climax and a resolve. So if you have a look at that one, it has a pretty boring intro with him talking and nothing happening. And then suddenly he talks about an interesting application for a while and then goes back to talking about the other applications and then just ends. Right? So you generally wouldn't have assumed that this was an interesting, engaging experience that was well designed around keeping people's attention. Right? This was just a piece of information. Now... what we're actually going to try and do this semester is I'll go and approach some of the YouTube channels and see if I can get more data like this, if you guys are interested in having a look at what Extra Credits has or what the Idea Channel have in terms of when they find engaging information. So a bad curve could look like this, right? That, you know, it goes so low that suddenly everybody leaves your video because nobody cares anymore about your protagonist or about what you're saying. Right? Now, you wouldn't intend this experience, right? You wouldn't intend everybody to leave and then try and make it better and then have more people leave. Generally, if you get to point C here, that would most of your people would leave. There is a discussion around, you know, really, really bad movies, right? Some people have like a sunk cost fallacy where if you ask them, between like point C and the bottom there, they're saying no. This is a bad. I shouldn't watch this. This is just stupid, right? And they ask, why are you still watching it? Well, I haven't seen the end yet. It's kind of a sunk cost, right? They've already watched some of it, so they might as well watch the rest, even if they don't think it's very interesting, right? So you could get some people who still watch you, even though you're kind of like below neutral in interest, right? It's now kind of negatively, this is boring, this is terrible. I've seen lecturers who can do this. We had a lecturer at Otago who had a class of 90 students, so about the size of you guys. By lecture four, there were two students turning up to his lectures. Right? Now, normally, if I put, tape deck up here, 10% of you will turn up regardless. Right, so there must have been something he was doing really badly in his interest curve to drive enough of you away. Right? So what does a bad... That would be a very bad interest curve. When we talk about interest curves, I actually do this at multiple scales of interest curve. So a lot of you are doing my bachelor in programming, games and apps, right? So one of the things I do is I look across the three-year program and I say, okay... How can I make a red thread of interesting courses so at least one thing you do per semester is interesting or at least related to games, right? So I'm kind of, I don't know if it's the right way of doing it, but I'm suggesting this course is the kind of game interest course for the students who are interested in games. And then you have maths and programming, which you kind of just have to do. So hopefully during your week, you have some like math stuff, which is a bit meh. And depending on who you are, sometimes the programming is really good or it's a bit meh. And then hopefully this is a bit more interesting as a game thing. But for some of you, it'll be the programming course is like, wow, that's really cool. We're learning code. And oh yeah, the experience stuff is a bit meh. Right? So I try and create those different experience curves across a week and across a semester and across a 3-year degree program. And within a single lecture, I try and get it to go up and down and have a break so you can go away and get refreshed. So we don't just do this at one time scale. We do it at many, many time scales. And you can do the same for a movie. You can talk about the whole arc of the movie or the whole arc of your experience, and then individual vignettes, individual small pieces of experience which need to have this kind of shape of up and down. Mario, one curve per level, one curve per world, and one curve for the overall game, right? So you could draw those curves. And so one of the things we're going to do today is you guys are going to draw those curves, right? So we have a break coming up soon. I'm also, at 3 o'clock, we're going to have the, I promised that we're going to have the third years come in, so the third year is going to pitch their game. That's, in the overall structure of a 3-hour lecture, that's somewhere near the climax, right? Because I'm hoping they're going to be more engaging than me, so you guys will get a, wow, okay, that's what the third years are doing, that's amazing, and then I can resolve with the end of the lecture, right? So so some of the third years are suggesting there might be a drop-off during that time, but, you know, that's up to them. So, but we talk about this idea of fractal. Have you guys heard of fractal geometry? Yeah, so the idea that you could have something at one scale that then is repeated at a smaller scale and repeated at a smaller scale and repeated at a smaller scale, right? So that's that a fractal has that. And you can kind of think of fractals in that way. Now, let's see if I have any questions that people then actually ask me. So, you what, M8, all of these questions gone. Yeah, I know, I'm sorry. Sorry, mate, I got that wrong. Hi, is there something you can find previous exams for the course? Right, so we've only had one previous exam for this course because this is the second time it's run like this. We have many, many previous exams before that, and I see two people want to know that information. So, I can put the previous exam up in Blackboard, right? There is a previous exam link. I'll put it up in Blackboard so you guys can have a look at what I've done before. We're going to have a digital exam for this, so you will use your own computer. And you bring in, and if you don't have a laptop, we can lend you laptops. Because for many years, I had to read Norwegian handwriting. And if I got my interest curve for marking the exam, right, and I start with like 80 papers to mark, and let's say that starts here. Reading handwritten Norwegian on pieces of paper, particularly the yellow carbon copy sheet, where you guys don't press hard enough, my interest kind of drops to about here and then just keeps going down. No, that's not entirely true. I mean, you occasionally, like, you know, you'll get an A exam and go, wow, that was really good. And then, you know, have to read, then maybe another good exam. Yeah, so you do get a bit of up and down with finding good exams. Interestingly, you can often sort assignment marking by when they are submitted, because often the kind of, you know, really good students and really good groups who have worked really hard and got things done often submit, you know, an hour or two early, right? Because, you know, they were done. And then you get a bunch of students who kind of do it at the last minute, just try and get something in and submit, right? So if you look at the time of submission and how likely they are to get a grade, the closer you are to the submission, the more likely you are to be just hacked together and not very good. And so one way is to reverse order the marking. So when I start with all the ones that have just submitted and work my temporally backwards through the thing. So hopefully by the time I'm getting bored, I'm going, oh, God, why does nobody know what I taught them? God, you guys, it's terrible. Oh, actually, that guy understood. Oh, yeah, that group, really good. Oh, there's one bad one. Oh, yeah, that's really good. And then bad. And then that's good, and then I get to there, right? So I kind of manage my curve to try and get a kind of good bunch of exam course things to mark at the end here, Right? So I do that myself because I want to preserve my ability to give you a good grade, that I don't just start out with all the very best ones, and then by the time I'm getting to the ones who are last submitted, I'm already tired and I'm already annoyed, and so I give you a really bad grade, potentially worse than I should, because my interest and my interest curve has got to a point where they shouldn't be. Right? So as a grader, we also try and manage these interest curves. So where did the old questions go? Okay, one of them's a V. Is that significant? Wow, you guys have added a lot. My pet is dead. Will it go to heaven? If you go to heaven, your pet probably goes to heaven. So when Hitler did nothing, even doing nothing, he got wrong. Right. So when you're sitting there doing nothing, that was still wrong. Right. So Hitler did nothing. Wrong. He got it wrong, even when he was doing nothing. That's fair enough. Was Hitler right about the Jews? I love... Yeah, right, okay. So, not really a question, just a strange thing I noticed in the audience, 55K. Right. A video with this viewed, period 124. Okay, yep, no. We can also look at where... right. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a lollipop? That's a range question. Okay, so you guys have a bunch of anonymous questions. The answer to the last one is almost certainly not, because, you know, that's not how sperm work. But, you know, if you guys need me to talk about that, then, you know, that's an interesting... I do not know how apocryphal that is. I just don't know, right? It would seem to be unlikely, right? So fractal curves. So I'll go back to the questions, and we can see if you guys, because I'm assuming you guys can see each other's questions as well. Yes, yeah. So you can attack each other's kind of and because you have to vote them up and down, so I can just rank them by vote, right? So. What I want you to do is in a group activity, and we're going to have to do this if you guys are, you might have to find someone to sit close to. So you should be sitting close to other people. What we want you to do is draw an interest curve of one of the following experiences. Now, I want you to do this kind of together-ish, right? So at least two people sitting next to each other. If you can do it with four or find a slightly large group around you that you can work together on, pick one of these activities. And work out how you would draw an interest curve, right? And so I'm going to give you kind of the 5 minutes, and then we'll have a 10-minute break from 2 to 10 past. So now, if you want me to play Bohemian Rhapsody, I probably have to stop the stream. The stream shouldn't bother me. So. Technically, I shouldn't be really playing Bohemian Rhapsody because of that, but I'll show you the YouTube of it anyway. While you do this, pick one, and the idea is to think through like how you were interested in the story and see if you can remember parts of the storyline and draw the interest curve. If you can't remember any of those four, so if you have any of you played Plants vs. Zombies? Some of you have, some of you might remember some fun bits in it. If you want to do Plants vs. Zombies, that's great. Hopefully some of you remember Cinderella. You could also do Cinderfella if you're a fan of the 1950s American musicals. And Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, or anything that you particularly agree on as drawing. Now, a way of showing this, and again, we do this because I don't know if you guys are willing to do this a second time, but if we go to Google Docs, we have we can have a shared document, and you can draw your interest curve using the draw tool in Google Docs, right? If you go to draw, which is Google Draw. You can actually find draw Google Drawing, that one. So if you go to Google Draw, you can actually do the same kind of thing. You can do collaborative drawing on a surface. And in here, the simplest way of doing is, let's say I have a line, and I draw a line here, and I draw a line here. And then I start saying, okay, let's pick a curved line or a scribble. The curved line allows you to go, okay, so we start here, and then it goes down, and then it goes up, and then it goes down, and then it goes up, and then it goes even better, and then it was amazing, and then it was completely terrible, and then we went home. Right, so, and if I press escape, I get that. And if you want to then say, okay, how do I edit that? I click on it, and you go to edit, where is the edit points? There is a, there we go. I double click on it, and I can move these up and down and add points, right? So if you wanted to collaboratively work on your computer, you can collaboratively design, or just draw it on a piece of paper and hold it up at me, right? So I'm happy either way. We could put it into a shared document if you all wanted to submit something to a shared document, but I think we can just use pieces of paper at the moment because you're all kind of, not many of you have your laptops, and it's going to be a bit awkward to try and add it all. So in groups, try and work out which of these you want to do, and while we do that, I will go to YouTube and play Bohemian Rhapsody in the break. Okay, so, and then we'll be back at 2:15 to discuss your engagement curves. So... $416 million views.
Hey, are you the new? Yes, lovely. Is that actually playing? Killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger now.
thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me. Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me. Yeah.
didn't order a plate. That's great.
We got the cake.
Right. Okay, so we have some potential interest curves. So what did we pick?
Oh, sorry. We were just trying to draw the Bohemian Fluid in here and the thing, so sort of dropped immediately.
Right. Yeah. So yes. So it you can say.
Yeah, sorry. So we were drawing the Bohemian Rhapsody while listening to it. So no audio, so it just dropped immediately.
Yep.
So it's very low curve all the way through, really.
Because you could hardly hear anything.
So for fun, we draw the No Man's Sky curve.
Oh, No Man's Sky. Yeah, No Man's Sky. Oh, my. Yes. So
very, very much hype, and then the release date came along.
And yes, so interestingly, in the curve, and I can hold that up to the video and see, no, you can't see anything because it's a piece of paper. Yes, you've drawn it. So it actually went backwards in time. And got worse. So it actually destroyed your previous experience that you thought was going to be good, and it just ripped it apart and made it absolutely terrible. No Man's Sky was a very, very bad release. bad curve. So they've done an update and they've tried to pick it up, right? And so. So basically, drawing up here, we have the No Man's Sky curve. So we had someone with No Man's Sky curve, which was because of the Bohemian Rhapsody, I couldn't find a way of playing the audio. So that one kind of went like this and then like that because it was hard to hear. No Man's Sky was, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. Oh, what the? And then kind of, oh, yeah, they did some stuff, but not enough. And now we're suggesting they did an update recently, which kind of got it back to being okay. But they've lost so many people because of this bit that, bad reputation is hard to get over. And your sprinkles on was sprinkles on stuff that's not appealing was the kind of once you've made something bad, making it pretty is tricky. So, other interest curves. Does someone want to call out an interest curve? Let's have a look. Show me. Oh, yep. Which? Yeah, you can come up and show it. If anyone else wants to come up and show as well. Got another volunteer. He's coming down. So, and what did you pick?
The movie, The Room.
You picked The Room. Yeah. Right. Okay. So, you picked The Room. I'll you can talk on it.
Thank you. I can remember like this, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. And I can...
grab it. Right, so The Room.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like, what's that for? Who knows about the movie The Room and has seen it? Okay. But do you guys know about the movie? Okay, so you know it's what called one of the worst movies ever made. And because of that, Well, it has a paradox because it is one of the worst movies made.
Okay. It's interesting and yet terrible.
Yes. So I have to like this and a line here. This is like the meh line. As everything when we begin something, we always had an initial interest. But in the first scene, just the first 5 seconds, it just goes like really like here, because it's so bad. And then it's like stays bad. But then it goes so bad that it's like goes here and then starts coming down here. And like it's just so bad and that just becomes good and one of the best movies I've ever seen. And it stays like that. And then because it is bad, so it's like goes here and then shows up like here again. And then it does that again, like here and then goes here and then goes down and comes here again and then keep going. And it does that until go up and forward. And in the ending, it doesn't end anywhere, it just is like ends somewhere in no spot of a paradox because it is bad that is so good. It is so good but it's so bad. So it doesn't ending the movie itself is like outside the whole frame.
Yes, excellent, thank you. And thank you for coming up.
So the challenge with that kind of movie, I'm hooked over my ear somehow, is that, how do I get this untangled? There we go. Designing for this would be very, very hard, right? Because if you go out with the intention of making a completely terrible movie, you generally make a bad movie, but you don't get epically bad, right? And so you tend to just be bad. So yes, the creator's intent was to make an amazing thing, and he thinks it is an amazing thing, and that actually helps making it in here as the, oh my god, this is genius. No, it's really awful. Oh my god, no, it's not. So yes, you can get paradoxical things. And the other thing is also, the first time you have an experience, it might be like this. And then the second time, it might not be as bad because you're expecting it. And then it just is bad, because the second and third time it might not be any good. Or, it was like this, but then you notice something that made it good, or you notice something that made it much worse. So it, there's kind of, over time, even, your interest curve can change, right? So, if any of you played Heavy Rain, the game, right, which was kind of a narrative game, the first time you play it, you're feeling like you're having an influence on the story. And then you play it a second time and go, it didn't actually matter what I did, the story still followed the same path. So the first time, it was kind of, hey, this is engaging, the story's interesting, I'm having an effect, that's cool, interesting, and you get to hear, and you go, oh yeah, that was good, right? So it was a good experience overall. And then the second time, you get to hear, where last time it was this, you go, wait a minute, that's the same as what happened last time. And you go along here and go, that's the same as well. And, you know, go there and you go, oh no, actually, I'm not doing anything. This is a pretty boring experience. I know everything's going to happen, and now I'm no longer interested. So, also, when you have your first time through something versus your second or your third time through, the interest curve might change, right? So, did anybody find an interesting interest, an argument they had about interest? So you picked a topic and some people thought Bohemian Rhapsody was the greatest thing on earth and other people thought it was a bit boring and tired. Okay, no interesting arguments. That's good in some sense but terrible in others. Right, so when designing these experiences, you kind of part of what you do is say, okay, are there things that are going to be inherently interesting and can I use those? So they talk about here the sort of aesthetics of presentation and the psychology of proximity. So poetry and aesthetics, the way in which something is presented, and also psychological proximity is, can you relate to the thing, right? If I start talking about things that you have no ability to relate to, it's hard for you to be interested even to start with, right? So, you know, my inherent interest in Desperate Housewives is relatively low. Because with the description of the plot, it's kind of, I have no interest in these people at all. It's just, I don't care about their lives. That's not a life I ever expect to have. I'm just not interested at all. And so, but for other people, they might have a psychological proximity and be able to project themselves into that environment and go, oh, actually, that might be interesting to learn about. So when you're talking about this inherent interest, what can you say about their experience that might be special about my experience, right? So your inherent interest. So I've got some of you here today because you're interested in games, right? And so I just say, game development. And some of you say, oh, well, that's interesting. I'm interested in making games, right? Some people, like my father, wonders why I do something so trivial, right? Because games are trivial, and therefore, why are you wasting your time on trivial things, right? So for him, that would be zero inherent interest. What I've tried to do is also kind of, you know, what can I make special about you coming here? So, you know, we try and do the introduction things, and I try and make my lectures different and engaging, and we try and get you to do different things. I also will try and engage you throughout your multiple years with doing kind of experimental education on you. So asking you to think about how you're being educated and meta-analysis to try and make the course more interesting. What sets the experience apart and what is immediately appealing about my experience? So one is there aren't many places you can study game development in Norway, right? So there's Westerdals, but it costs a lot. There's Hamar, but they don't do programming like we do, so their graduates don't get jobs. Our graduates do get jobs. So, you know, and there are people up north who, and Nord-Trøndelag, who are now in University of Nord, they also teach a game development course, but they've got a broader focus. We are more on programming. We make you good programmers. So I've tried to make this interesting and different to all your other options. So I've tried to get a reasonable interest in you coming to the university. So let's compare some themes, though, right? So game development, I kind of got all of you here, though there's a course up in Lillehammer, for example, where it's in TVF, so TV and film, and it's a 10-point course on pornography. So you get to study pornography for a semester. So that might have a high inherent interest for some people and quite a low inherent interest for other people, right? So themes can create different background interest levels. So let's compare some themes. Dragons versus hamsters. So how many people find dragons interesting? And hamsters interesting? I think dragons won, okay? So Game of Thrones, mother of hamsters. You'd watch Mother of Hamsters. I have three hamsters. But then it's a percentage, right? So it's not that everybody's going to find one of these more than the other. Yep. If they're fire-breathing hamsters, that could be very engaging. Okay, so if I said our setting is Hawaii or Hama, who would be more inherently interested in finding out about Hawaii? And how many want to have a thing set in Hama? Okay, it's colder there. So actually, we're getting a bit of a combination between hamsters in Hama and dragons in Hawaii. So those are our options for making this particular movie. I think dragons in Hawaii are currently winning in this particular audience. Zombies versus plants. So zombies have been a bit overdone. And plants, they're plants. So, though you watch Day of the Triffids? If you haven't watched Day of the Triffids, you should watch Day of the Triffids. That makes plants scarier than zombies. So, who's up for zombies as a theme? And for plants? Aha! Right, so actually, in this case, we've got dragons in Hawaii attacking plants, potentially. So they're vegetarian dragons of some kind. So, accountants versus dragon slayers. Who's for accountants? Who's for dragon slayers? Okay, right, so we're going to have dragon slayers. Now, what's interesting here is if you match dragons and dragon slayers, you might actually decrease the novelty in the inherent interest, right? Because that's consistent. And so, oh, there's some dragon slayers and some dragons, and they're in Hawaii, and they're either smoking plants or they're attacking plants or, you know, doing some kind of thing with plants. But if you say there are accountants and dragons, it's kind of, what? What's happening to those accountants? So you might trigger interest just by a juxtaposition, a putting together of strange bedfellows. Sharknado, tornadoes and sharks. Woohoo! Okay. So inherent interest isn't just a linear combination of things that you say, I have this interesting thing, this interesting thing, this interesting thing. You smash them together, they'll be more interesting. There's also some kind of interesting combinations. Yep. Yep. Right, so yeah, so a smash-up game where you get different themes of cards and you kind of smash them up together and then you play someone else who smashed up a different pair. This is so the stream can hear as well. But yeah, so there are eagles versus sparrows. Eagles. Sparrows. Ooh. Sparrows did better this year than previous years. So in Game of Thrones, you have, you know, the sparrows. They were a thing, right? And so dragons versus sparrows, there was... Except Cersei got in the way of that and kind of killed the High Sparrow and all of his sparrows. So you never really got the dragons versus sparrow thing going. But eagles, that might be more interesting. So just picking some of your themes, you have to kind of understand your audience and think, okay, some of these things are going to be consistent. What can I use to get initial interest? So as I said with the experience of plants versus zombies, plants might be boring, zombies are interesting, but plants versus zombies, what the... So there's something going on here. So that is the idea of putting those odd things together might help engage your audience. So that's kind of their initial entry. So the other thing is the visual presentation of your experience. So we talk about aesthetics. So the aesthetics or the poetry of presentation. So the beauty in your game or your YouTube video. Now, we have very low aesthetics of our production on this, right? So if any of you go to the stream and watch me talk in the For Listening video, it's not high production quality, right? And unfortunately, this is about as pretty as it gets. Actually, no, I think Chris is probably the most attractive of the lecturers. I'm not sure. You guys would have to vote on that. That we could do an anonymous poll and see which of the lecturers you found most sexually appealing as an anonymous post. But, you know... Unfortunately, that kind of question, we can't change anything about that, so it's a useless question, right? So when we talk later in the course about what you should ask your testers, when you ask about inherent interest, asking vanity questions like, which of us do you like the most? We can't change what we do about that, right? So I could change, you know, did you find this assignment interesting? Because if you didn't find it interesting, I could change the assignment. Right? But if you didn't find the lecture as interesting, it's kind of, well, not much we can do just in general. So 8-bit games are popular. Do I mean beauty in, like, prettiness specifically of graphics, or is it the general aesthetic that there is a feeling of beauty that you can also find things which are very blocky? Like, is Minecraft... beautiful. So there are certainly some. So Minecraft beautiful? People who think Minecraft is beautiful? People who think Minecraft is ugly? Okay, it's kind of, you know, 50, so it's somewhat beautiful. So there are some people who find that that's a beautiful presentation. So you could say that the simplicity and clarity and kind of style of Minecraft is beautiful. Right? So I'm happy to mean beautiful in that more general term. And as we just found there, is it beautiful to me or to others? So who am I trying to create this experience for? So at the outset of an interest curve and the outset of trying to engage people, thinking, okay, how do I present things that are going to be beautiful, or how are they presented in a beautiful way? Because that presentation will sit throughout the whole experience. Game companies tend to spend a lot of time on the box art. They used to, anyway. And some game developers actually would start by designing the box art for their game. So they're trying to work out what it would look like on the storefront. And then having done that, they'd work backwards to what the game actually was. So this would be like designing the screenshots that you're going to put into Steam to show off the game and get people to buy it. And once you've worked out what those are, then making a game that generates those screenshots. Right? So it's kind of a very sales-focused way of thinking. And you can do the same in a lot of like with trailers, right? You make the trailer for a movie to sell the movie, to get the pitch, to get the money to make the movie that's a trailer of. Right? So then in movies, they kind of do this a bit. They make a kind of scene to try and show it off, and then they get enough money to make the movie that gets out as the trailer. So working out like that, who is your target audience, who you're appearing for, what does the initial look like, look and engage people with. So if you look at Plants vs. Zombies, they do a bunch of things to make the zombies seem more engaging, right? So this is a comic kind of zombie, right? You could have had a very photorealistic zombie, and because zombie is just a dead person, technically they don't even need to have rotted in any way or be anything other than looking like a human. So you could just have like a human standing there with like slightly paler skin. That could have been a zombie, but that would be a pretty boring zombie. So you try and make it pretty, but if you make it engaging and you make it lots of like terrifying with lots of like sort of flesh torn off and skull showing through and things, that might be too horrific to get people to play a casual game. So you have to get your visual appearance to match your audience. So here, they went with a cartoon version. And to try and make it humorous, they went with that whole cartoon feeling, and so they added, you know, the sort of Michael Jackson dancing zombie kind of explanation. And on the card, it's kind of is a bit humorous, and they try and get that theme throughout the whole of the experience. This is a Viking building game, so one of the Norwegian companies spent a lot of time trying to get the female troll to look right. So lots of testing with potential end users to say, well, what should a female troll look like? Right, so. And you see, they've ended up kind of with purple hair and bright purple lipstick, right? Because, you know, if you make it too gender neutral, people don't know it's a female troll. But, you know, if you make it too Hollywood, then it doesn't feel like a troll. So how do you get halfway between? And if you've watched Shrek, for example, right? How do you deal with trolls? Now, Shrek is quite a reasonably kind of, you know, not terrifying character, even though he's a troll, and you know everybody's terrified of him. But you know his skin's not that terrible, and he doesn't look very asymmetric. He doesn't seem to shamble around. He's not what the fairy tales have of a troll, which means when Fiona turns into a troll, she's not that hideous, right? It's just it's hard to get that balance between being a troll and yet being engaging. An ogre. Right, yeah, well, ogre troll. Yes, there are differences. Even as an ogre, though, he's not an unattractive ogre, if that makes any sense. So yeah, he's not an ogre that is immediately repulsive, or a troll. But this is a troll, he's an ogre, even though they're both green-skinned. So, projection. One of the other things, when you're trying to interest people, you have to find something that they can find interesting. Now, usually we look at projection as to how different it is to yourself, right? Normally for humans, you have to find something that they can connect to. So if I make a story about something that you have no feeling for, it's very hard to get you interested in that. And if it's something that you have about yourself, so, you know, if you're particularly interested in hamsters, right? And you know, you like I love hamsters, and therefore a movie about hamsters, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I love hamsters. If I know my girlfriend thinks hamsters are really amazing, and I hear about this hamster movie, I might think, oh, okay. I wonder what interests her so much in hamsters. I should watch that and see if I can find out about it, right? So I could predict myself saying, people I care about something. So there's something interesting going on there. And then, you know, society that's similar, project out. And othering and others. Society has a big challenge at the moment with this concept of other. And one of the challenges is around refugees, for example, is because their experience is so foreign, it can be difficult to engage people in a story about refugees because it's so far away from their own experience that they just can't connect. But when they showed a picture of a dead kid on the beach that was a kid that you could say, well, that's like my brother or my son or my neighbor's child. Once it was personalized, suddenly you had this massive engagement because it went from being other to being something that you could see as being your family, right? So even though, of course, there had been hundreds of kids dying on beaches and drowning and being washed up, we hadn't seen any of them, so they were another, they were just something else. But once we could project ourselves into that situation, once you could see yourself in that situation, then the experience becomes more engaging, right? So there's a psychological distance that is hard to overcome unless you find something that connects. So psychological projection requires empathy. So for that child that was killed on the beach, and I forget the name of the kid, but yeah. Do you remember this whole Syrian being killed? So, you know, there's a whole bunch of arg around what actually happened. But empathy was the core thing. If you don't care about other people in any way, right? You look at a dead child on the beach and you go, oh, yeah, there's some meat on that. Right? That would be the zero empathy approach. Right? Now, hopefully none of you thought that. Because that would be terrifying, right? But you have to be able to have empathy. You have to be able to project to be able to understand how that story is engaging or how you start with the initial interest. There has to be some level of imagination, right? So if you're going to project yourself into somebody and into another experience, you have to be able to think, what would it be like for me to be in that experience, right? Because if you can't think, if you don't have the imagination to think what it would be like for me, I can feel not really empathy then, but more sympathy, right? So, oh, poor refugees. But they're still others. I've got, I can feel sorry for them. But if I can't imagine what it would be like to have my house bombed and imagine having to flee, then that limits the amount of engagement I can have, limits the projection I have into that experience. So you need imagination and empathy. So you need to want to care and be able to think about yourself projected into that. So in the book, he talks about immersion being poetry plus consistency, right? So when you immerse, you have this environment which is engaging and interesting and is consistent, because as soon as I make the world inconsistent, I will pop you out of being projected, right? I will make it clear that you are not this kind of person, right? So the projection and without consistency is very difficult. So many of you would have had that experience of a loss of that suspension of disbelief, that ability to project yourself in, and something happens and you go, oh God, that would never happen, right? And it just pops you out, right? Or I have the problem that I know too much about physics, and so someone will do something and I go, no, that can't happen. No, you got that wrong. And suddenly I'm out of the story because I've been thrown out by some inconsistency with the world. With games, part of projection is interactivity, right? That I am actively engaged in the game. When we talk about experiences, we talk about passive experiences where you have no interaction. But mostly what we talk about in this course and in this degree are active experiences, right? So when you interact with the experience. So if we have a look at projection in Plants vs. Zombies, for example, they try and write the text in a way that is more kind of friendly and engaging and fits the visual theme. So the help screen for Plants vs. Zombies, help for plants and zombies game. When the zombies show up, just sit there, don't do anything. You win the game when the zombies get to your house. So, yes, this help section brought to you by the zombies. So the idea here is that, you know, they're trying to make it more kind of personal, right? This is not an impersonal help section. This is not just, place three plants to kill three zombies. Right? It's more conversational. So they're trying to get that kind of imagining yourself listening to someone talk about this or listening to this writing and being part of this world. So we can measure some of these interest factors, and here are some graphs. You'll see those if you want to have a look in the book. And they talk about there being different levels of different types of things. So here we have inherent interest being potentially high, with poetry and projection being low, right? So we pick some interesting things, but maybe the way we present them isn't that interesting, and we don't connect them to you, right? So Game of Thrones tends to have some average characters. So say Star Wars, Luke Skywalker is supposed to be a person that is a bit like you, right? A kid that lives on a farm, and as Oscar Sharp was saying on Friday, the most common phrase in movie trailers on IMDb, the most common word is like that and is and I, but the most common sort of pronoun is he and him. But one of the most common phrases is in a small town, and another one is a boy is forced. Right? So a lot of movies have this idea of like, in a small town, because lots of people come from small towns, and we can I can identify with, small town thing. And so they try and go for that projection. They try and make the characters accessible. And they try and make it inherently interesting, right? Because just saying, you know, a boy from Hama travels north. Yeah, he probably does. To fight dragons. Ooh, okay. That's added a whole bunch of different things, but it's a boy from Hama, so it's someone I could potentially identify with, and now he's doing something interesting, right? So rather than saying, you know, a superhero travels north to fight dragons, and you, there's nothing you can project yourself into there. You're not a superhero. Well, I probably shouldn't ask. I'll reveal your secret identity, but no. If any of you are superheroes, you're not normal. The rest of us aren't superheroes, and so it's harder for us to project into those characters. But that doesn't mean you won't find it interesting, right? So you watch the Marvel movies, there are usually the amazing characters, but also there are often more normal characters, so you can kind of get that interaction. And so I was going to make you guys do another little group activity around each other, which is talking about the inherent interest factors, right? So think about like the inherent interest in terms of novelty, and projection and aesthetics. So think, what are the ability to project into Plants vs. Zombies or Pac-Man or Scream? So think about the inherent interest, the aesthetics of those three things, and your projection into them, and discuss within each other what you think those are and how important they are in those particular experiences. Okay, so that's what we're going to do, and I'll give you guys 10 minutes to chat in the beside each other, because I've got the third years coming at 3, but we'll do this now. Okay, so talk to the person next to you and start working out what are those three. What's most important? Is it either the topic themes? Is it the beauty of the presentation, or is it your ability to identify with characters? Okay, so start discussing.
The Google Sheet sort of escalated a bit.
Oh.
I stuck my head out with my name. I didn't post back anonymously, and now. It's getting a bit out.
This one.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
There's some derogatory.
Okay, that's not very good. So,
I'll be happy to answer the questions, but they're a bit unsavory.
Okay, so. Yes. So the good questions are probably good.
Yes.
So how about we take this off?
Maybe I asked for it.
No, because I
snubbed them by saying I insulted some of the more childish ones. Yeah, that's just one of them. That's me.
Right.
Because I snubbed them by saying that I thought you had to be 13 to attend the university, and of course the attacking start.
Right. Yeah.
I can totally handle it, and it's like a nice display
it's interesting.
How you get attacked for like standing out. But
yeah. So it's also an interesting discussion on what is acceptable. Right? And so, and anonymity creates a frame where people can be artists, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and so this is.
It sort of illustrates the whole, the power of anonymity.
Yeah, and the challenge of anonymity, and so.
And also, maybe the fact that I'm a girl choosing to like stand out.
It's
interesting, I
think. It's interesting, and what I find, the channel, and I had to take the off the screen because, we had this for about 2 years ago when I was doing the NLA. We had some pieces, right? And I actually sat last out, said, right, we need to talk about it, and I need to talk to the person who wrote it. And that didn't work.
So, because a lot of people are turning to me and like, it's not okay, but it's
so. Let's see. I need to go to the moderating section, and I have to find the moderation. Where is my moderator? So I don't want to prevent.
Bad about it. I'm sitting here and hoping that it's not someone in the class.
Yes, it is.
Or at least.
League of Legends. Okay, so so what I can do is I'm not sure where the moderation is. Normally, like in my question thing, I would moderate the questions.
Once you shed the anonymity, it's so easy to attack you.
Yeah. So for me, I've always been myself online. But the challenge I have is that as a white male, I did not get attacked.
Right. Exactly.
And I remember one time. So one time I did go on, and I got attacked because I had long hair. Right? And how can I have a beard and long hair and myself to the girly man? And then, you get the same sort of then vicious attacks.
Yeah.
But there does seem to be a gender issue, right?
It does.
And what's unacceptable is that in a class of adults.
That's so ironic, yes. Because that was sort of my point initially.
I'm all for
having fun with the sheets.
But
there is a line somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was what I was trying to point out.
So, are you willing for me to talk about this?
Definitely, yeah. That's what I want.
Okay.
You have to use it for something. So.
Yeah. So I'm quite happy to take this off as an
Sweet.
But I need you talking to me. Because this has that whole Anna Sarkeesian Gamergate.
That's what bothers me because I'm into game development. I like the whole. I like it. I'm dating one who had your course.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And Tony gave positive feedback about my course.
Yeah. That's
okay. Okay.
And this sort of drags us down because we don't want the community to be like this.
No.
Especially, I feel like the apprehension of going into this sort of field as a woman, and there's only and Yeah. This sort of confirms what I didn't want to believe, that I can't be that bad. This class seems alright, and then I get this.
They're annoyed.
In my face.
They're annoyed, and that's really scary.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you think we've come further, and then you take a dive under the surface of this one.
Yeah, and the thing is that what's challenging is that my third year I hope this is gone, right?
Yeah.
So I work hard to try and get rid of this, but it takes years, right? Because there is enough of a culture of hate in and kind of a that's a problem.
That's
really hard to get. Anything I can do to make it easier for you guys, right?
Yeah.
Is something that I'd like to do. So, but if you're willing to make a job better,
I'm strong enough to handle it.
You need to probably ask more.
Sadly,
I spent an hour. Also, I'm quite happy to, if there is anything else that I can do readily, right?
In this way, the sheet is a good idea because at least we get to address it now,
yeah.
As opposed to never knowing it was there in the first place. Because I didn't. I knew about that the hate culture is strong and that women have a hard time. I know all these things, but I was like, it won't happen here. And then it does happen here.
Is
the game jam hackathon thing really happening?
Yes, I want need to know now. Yes. Okay. Yes. I'm sending out a notification that it is happening. I was looking at the weather so I can do a barbecue. So the plan is for there to be a game jam.
Okay,
so I'll put out a sheet tonight for everyone to sign up.
Okay. And is it still okay if there are some people
saying
we're making a hackathon
yes.
instead of the game?
Yeah, hackathon game. It's the same thing. Yep. Okay.
When did they start the third assignment?
Third assignment?
And then you have our second assignment.
We have it. Yeah, I have it in the sheet. I have it in the sheet.
Okay. Right. Okay. I'm starting back kind of in a sec, not at 3. So we have students coming in at 3, but I was going to start again now and just talk a little bit until 3. Until after the third years come. Well, we could do a 10-minute break and then have the third years present. Yeah. Okay. We'll do a kind of 5-10-minute break, and then my third years will come in at 3, and we'll get them to pitch, and then I'll get you to discuss your interest skirts. Okay. So have a break. Go out. You've had the discussion. Go away. Have a short break, and then come back. Either continue the discussion. If you think of other experiences you'd like to discuss, then that's good too. And anyway, third years, and then we'll have a discussion after the third years have presented. Okay.
I think you're 2 seconds ahead.
Yes. Yep. We're also, we're also going to try and make sure we can submit exams in Blackboard. Actually, I'd like to say so. Yeah, I need to see what a student sees to be able to help with that. So, I'm quite happy also, you know, because I don't know. I think you get it set up that I think I set it up so you have multiple attempts, or is it one attempt? I have to check in Blackboard, but. We can put that up and start discussing it a little bit. I was also going to. Aha, we have our first third year turning up. Now, we have 6 groups, don't we? No, we have, well, actually, like 5 presenting. 5 groups presenting. Now, I think we'll make this a survey on Blackboard. So we do, so I go to coursework, and so, assessment. I'm gonna make an anonymous survey, and this is actually an anonymous survey, so we're gonna create. More third years, they're coming in. Right, name. Okay, so what are the 5 groups presenting? We have. Yeah, no, but the yeah, so we have I need to go to the sheet. Okay, so people are coming back at 3. This is all good. Right, so we have group 4. Group 4, Team Beyond, Broken Queen, Bunny Doors. Yeah, so we have the group. So we're going to try and get... They are. Group 4. Yep. I'm just putting in the names of Group 4, Team Bjorn. Let's submit that and see. Okay, so, page unresponsive, wait, because I'm interested in your feedback, I'm going to wait for this to respond. I'm creating an anonymous survey where you will rank the 5 pitches from the third year students. I'm interested in also you thinking about and potentially noting down so we can have a discussion on it around now the third year students who are going to pitch to you do not know that I am going to get you to grade them on their inherent interest because they're pitching to you about their game. So I want you to think, is this interesting themes, right? Is this projection? Can I see myself playing this game? And some of them might have some slides. Or, like, do you think it will be presented well?
It can vary from the norms.
Right. Now they know. You
might as well come in.
Right. So you'll come in. You can hang out over there. I'm willing to go. So these are some of our third years. I didn't require all of them to show up, but quite a few of them did. So come on in.
My group stitched, man.
Your group stitched you.
Yep.
Warning, one or more survey availability exceptions have membership conflicts. The most permissive combination or of exemption settings will be evaluated for every okay. So apparently that's available, though I'm not sure why. There are a bunch of warnings. Okay, that's weird. I'm assuming you guys can. Okay. Okay, so, right, so there should be now an announcement, so you guys will be able to write and order the five presentations. So, we'll start, and if I have a look at which group would you invest money in? So, I was going to try and do this with actual Monopoly money and give you guys Monopoly money that you would then at the end invest in each of these game companies, and then at the end of the year, your investment would pay off according to the grades they got in their assignments. Right? So you could work out if you'd made a clever investment and who had made a bad investment. But that felt a bit too complex, and although it makes you interested in these guys, you could find out what other people put their money in and try and cripple that project so they got bad grades, so your group would get better. No, I don't want you to kind of start influencing each other that way. So, rather than that, I'll just have the third years present their games as a pitch and think about what we've been talking today about inherent interest and about projection and about potentially what it might, like, how it appears in your mind, at least. Right, so, do I begin? Okay, so there should be a survey that some of you can go into and decide ranking on like this of saying, well, that's group four. So we're going to start with group four, and then Team Beyond, and then Paraplegic Activity, then Bunny Boys, and then Broken Queen. Okay, so group four. You have 2 minutes.
G'day, I'm group four.
Try and 5 minutes.
So our game is going to be a city manager with focus on trading and diplomacy. We're going to make an... basically, the story is it's set in a land broken by wars, so it's divided into many, like, city-states, basically. And through trading and diplomacy, you will, like, affect the outcome of history in this country. So you will basically decide who to trade with, how much money you take, all that kind of thing, build up your trade HQ to, like,
good day, can you hear me now? Yes, testing. Oh. Where was I?
Trading,
yes. You basically have a supply. Every, like, city states have their supplies, how much they produce things on their own, trade. And you, as, like, the goal of the game is to just become the best trader ever. You're gonna make... I lost my train of thought. Oh. Well, anyway, you're gonna, like, build up your structures, like Factory, if anybody's played that. You're gonna develop iron swords or whatever if you want to influence the wars. Weapons, siege weapons, or just normal resources like clay pots. I don't know. You win by... we don't actually have a win goal yet.
Aha,
that's right. In the design documents that we have to decide on.
Right. Okay, so no win yet, but a win later. Okay.
Yes.
Right, okay, so that's group four, city building. Yeah. Right, so I now need Team Beyond. Ah.
All right, disclaimer, I did not choose my group's name. So hopefully by now you know that my name is Bjorn, and it was the rest of my group that decided we were supposed to be called Team Bjorn, and I didn't have a vote in this decision. So, what happens when you give wizards peace? They start dabbling in magic things they shouldn't do, especially portals. They figure out that they could make portals to other planets, other places, other planes of existence, and they summon in a bunch of Martians, skeletons, elves, dwarves, other nasty things, and we don't like that. So the heroes of the world decided to go out and kill them. The only problem is that there's 10,000 of them in one of us. So we are making a hack and slash beat 'em up roguelite game where you are trying to stop the world from being overrun by monsters. So currently, the plan is to have you run into the world, kill a bunch of stuff, get a lot of loot, get a point some that says you did it this good, and eventually you'll get swarmed by enemies and die. And you start over again and try to beat your own some. So here's one where the fun thing comes in. The world, since it's been manipulated by wizards, changes. So some zones has more gravity. Suddenly projectile weapons aren't as good. Or suddenly there's less gravity. So you can jump further, run faster, but also the enemies are equally much faster than you. And you have to think about how you use your projectiles or weapons to counter these things. Some places we might even flip gravity. So suddenly up is down and down is up. Yeah, that is currently our ideas. Hopefully we'll look into needing playtesters in about a month or two, if you want to join in.
So this is also a pitch to you guys to potentially play some of these games. Right, okay, thank you. Next, right, so next group is Therapeutic Activity.
Thank you. Okay, so who likes VR? So everybody, nice! You will be excited to hear that we are making a VR horror game where the player is set in a wheelchair!
A wheelchair!
Using motion controllers to move around. So, this concept is something that has never been done before. So imagine the feeling rolling around in a dark and old hospital. You feel the disempowerment, the isolation, and the fear of the unknown, which leads to a massive tension.
In a wheelchair. Excellent. Right, so that's Therapeutic Activity. Excellent, well done. Yeah, very good. And Funny Boys. Funny Boys. Which way is it? Yep.
Okay, everyone hears me? Yeah. Basically, the game is a battle royale arena match. Like, if anyone has played Battlegrounds Unknown, PUBG, only one, yeah, cool. You know what I'm talking about. So basically, it's a multiplayer game, and all the players choose their characters. Instead of being humans, they are animals, and each animal have different skills and abilities. And they are spawned into an island, and like in PUBG, they are forced towards the center of the map. So they can't just avoid each other, and the goal of the game is to basically, instead of picking up weapons and stuff, you steal abilities, you steal skills from other players and from other NPCs. So each player plays a class-specific animal. So if you kill that player, you get their class-specific ability, like swimming or flying or something special that's unique to them. And if you kill the NPCs, you increase your stats for whatever that NPC animal was. And the goal of the game is to be the last man standing, the one who kind of kills everyone, gets all the stats, and is the king of the island.
Okay, yeah. King of the island. Right. Yes, we have a question. Ben, okay, right, and so the last one is Broken Queen. Now this guy's a ringer because he's in your class.
Hello, hello, does it work?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Okay. Oh, so in our game took place in a fantasy world where you guys can play an human wolf looking like Shamira in virtual reality. And you have to find a friend in multiplayer and solve puzzles and climbing a tower together. But when you get the loot for the puzzle, you have to fight against each other to, at the end, reach the top of a tower and meet the cyborg princess. And what you do with her, it's up to you.
Okay, right. Okay, so those are the...
Right, those are our five games. So thank you, 30s. Well done. Wait. Voting is open on the survey. We also have people on the stream who will be voting. So you guys can vote. And in the end, we'll see which of our potential ideas had the best, had the highest rank. And I'll give that feedback to the third years. These guys have been making these games this semester. It's their third year project. So as they said, we are interested in having playtesters, having some of you give them feedback about how terrible or how fantastic a job they are doing. And so we'll set up some Google forms for them to do sign-ups, and I'll send that out to you guys, and you can sign up and say when you want to do some playtesting and kind of what games you might be interested in playtesting. Okay, so thank you, guys. Off you go. Were any of you able to find that survey? Okay, and you understand how to rank people? Oh, good. Okay, that's great. There's the first of that ranking I've done, so we'll see how that works. Okay, so now this was so we're gonna discuss inherent interest in fact in Plants vs Zombies or Pac-Man or Scream. So who did Plants vs Zombies? Nobody. Who did Pac-Man? Okay, so some of you talked about Pac-Man. You could do all three of them. Excellent. That's a very good thing to do. Right. So, you guys, Pac-Man, do you have any inherent... So, of these three categories, inherent interest, Pac-Man. What's the inherent interest of Pac-Man? So retro gaming would be a kind of inherent interest in... I've heard of Pac-Man, it's very famous, so it must there must be something good about it, right? So there's some inherent... Yep? Although there were a bunch of other games, so there are generally the sort of Pong style a bunch of side-scrolling games, platforming games. It's that is the genre we're in. Even the Mode 7, so you had racing car games, but it was that very simple track coming towards you style with a wee animated thing that moves back and forth. So not much, admittedly. Okay. So, and up there, inherent interest in Pac-Man, anything other than what they said? Anything you'd like to add? So some retro gaming feel, some gaming interest. Okay, so... What about the visual presentation of Pac-Man? What was that? What do you think of the visual presentation? Is Pac-Man attractive? Did any of you see Miss Pac-Man? So they had Miss Pac-Man, and apparently, and I'm honestly, they thought that having they discussed, you know, female playable characters, so they thought adding a pink bow to Pac-Man and lipstick would make it interesting for girls. It didn't seem to have really any effect at all. But what are they trying to do there? And in our analysis, what could you say they're trying to do? They're trying to increase projection. Exactly, right? So they're saying, oh, we'll try and make you feel like you could be a strange orange character that eats things too much. You want to predict that? We'll make it a woman. Strange alien creature that eats things. Obviously, that's better predict. So there are some like naive approaches to try and get more projection. But you can see that that's kind of an approach at that. And inherent interest, there are ghosts. So if we look at that, there are ghosts. That might, you know, ghosts are a bit scary. The aesthetic style is a cartoony style. Right? So how many of you like the aesthetic cartoon of Pac-Man? I like Pac-Man. I thought it was cute. It's very clear. And the advantage of, in a very pixelated world, having a very clear character was quite important, right? Because if you look at some of the other old games, like Oregon Trail, if we've got some images of that. The Oregon Trail things, you can kind of tell it's a cow or a horse or an animal. It's an ox, we think. It's some, like, that's took in, like, some sort of hairy pig. That's another version. Some of the images when you were traveling, that's looking more like an ox. But when you've only got a few pixels, it's sometimes very hard to know what things are, right? And so some of those kind of really pixelated views on things. Dwarf Fortress, if you're thinking, yes, to Dwarf Fortress, some people define Dwarf Fortress as the meaning of fun. Those people might be insane, but yes, Dwarf Fortress, if we look at the Wikipedia article, you can see the image, where are you, image of Dwarf Fortress. So yes, you get this sort of thing in Dwarf Fortress. So having a clear character, you could aesthetically think it was interesting, but it is its own aesthetic, its own art. Okay, so Pac-Man, we have some projection, hard to project, and like technically projection into Pac-Man, if you were an obese character who couldn't control their eating. And when you ate a special pill, it made the world completely change color and everything invert, and things that were scary you can now eat because you're wanting to eat everything. Yes, if you watch the Pac-Man TV series, that Pac-Man's weird, right? It's a weird thing to project yourself into. But as a game concept, it's still reasonable. So if we have a look at something like The Scream, just as a painting and an experience. So, inherent interest in that image. Nowhere, are you? It looks weird. There's something weird about, like, all these, like, weird lines. It's not a photograph, but there's a lot of these kind of bright coloured lines across there and swerving lines. And then there's this character in the middle. And it's not human, but it is human-like. So there is something inherently, there's a human in the scene, and we can look at the artistic style, and artistically it's got a lot of balance. There is aesthetically, there is a balance between the darker in the top corner and the darker there. The flow of the eye up to the two characters in the distance. These are aesthetic qualities of the image and the layout of the image. And as for projection, part of the Scream's appeal is that we understand this feeling of my life is out of control. And calling it the Scream is that kind of scream is that primal kind of and it feels more intense than just a photograph of someone screaming, right? This is kind of the world is almost reverberating with this scream, right? And there are people in the distance who are blurry and observing you. And sometimes when you get really angry, the people in front of you just kind of blur out because you're so angry, right? So it has kind of a projection imagination quality, right? It's also, you know, a very famous Norwegian painting, so most of you, I take it you've all seen The Scream before. Good, good. The Norwegians have made you. New Zealand kids would have been probably about 20% would have seen The Scream, and they'd have no idea what it was, and they'd kind of, oh, yeah. Kid draw that, did they? which you wouldn't get in Norway as a response. Okay, now, also for the game presentations up here, can you also see some, yep. We can do Plants vs. Zombies. Not many people would play Plants vs. Zombies, but we'll do Plants vs. Zombies. So, Plants vs. Zombies, what are the inherent interest factors? It's Plants. What is with Plants and Zombies, right? Because that's not a normal combination, right? Those are... Yes, Crazy Gardener fighting zombies with plants. It is kind of life as it is. We associate plants with growth and life and zombies with death. So this is a life and death battle, but done with avatars of life and death rather than life and death themselves, right? So often some of those metaphors, if you can find a metaphor that connects to people, then it makes it easier for them to engage with the thing because they can kind of, they've got that sense of light versus dark, life versus death, right? So that's a positive of plants versus zombies. It has a pretty aesthetic, right? And in terms of projection, did any of you project yourself as the zombies? So I know some people in Game of Thrones, for example, project themselves and, you know, want Cersei to win because you're on Team Cersei. Yay! She's like so focused. But to some extent, how you project yourself and those characters are flawed. Right, so in Game of Thrones, it's flawed characters. We're all got our own flaws, and so it's somewhat easier to project yourself into. And Plants vs. Zombies, they try and make the zombies kind of a bit silly and stupid, and the plants are fighting stupidity, waves of stupidity, basically. And that does feel a little bit like sometimes the American election seemed like you were kind of fighting against a wave of stupidity that was just like constant fake news. And I don't mean the new mainstream media. I mean actually fake stories about stuff that never happened. Just what? How can you believe that? And yet people do. Yes. So you can associate yourself. Yeah. And actually calling it a house. So if they'd made it like, you know, a factory or a garden shed, it wouldn't feel as personal as and a house, right? Because your house is something you project yourself into. So yeah, so that's a design choice, right? Design choice to make the player feel like it's your house that's being attacked. So anything? Right, now, okay, so that was where I was going to end the lecture, but we have one more thing to discuss, and that's to do with experiences and also to do with the question sections. So I liked this one, which was, if I go to the right place. What would I, as a professor in experience design, grade Blackboard as an educational tool? So when we actually did this process, and I was involved partly in the evaluation of the various learning management tools, Blackboard has some severe challenges and some holes. Some things are very good. Some experiences are bad. One of the things that's very nice is I do now have a student view, so I can see what you guys see. That helps me enormously because I can jump in and try and see what you see. However, I can't see everything you see, so I'm still going to help you get your guys to help me work out how to submit an assignment as a group, right? Because some of you are having trouble submitting your assignment. Yes? So I want to make sure we can do that before Thursday night because I've shifted it there so we could do that today. So how would I grade it? C? It's okay. I'd kind of, you know, it's all right. I use Blackboard. We're trying to use Blackboard heavily in first year because you're new. We're going to try and keep that experience. By third year, I'm using things like Jira for my third year course. And this is an example of Jira and backlogs. In fact, if we have a look at the particular project, so this is a group who is working on their issues and developing a project. I also have the game programming V17. So you can see in here we have a backlog of lectures topics. So I have game AI, game architecture, networking, maintenance of versions of libraries, the business of game development, team management, optimization, memory. These are in my backlog. The students select what the topic's going to be by putting it into the active sprint, which at the moment I hadn't closed off my previous sprint, so I better close that off now. So I'm using a project management tool, a professional project management tool, to manage my class rather than a learning management tool. Part of the reason to do that is you guys benefit from learning how professional tools work. So if I show you how I use a professional tool, hopefully you'll get an idea of how to use professional tools. And you'll never experience Blackboard outside of education. And so anything you learn about Blackboard dies with your education, right? So I would like to teach you tools that might be useful beyond the end of your studies, right? So that's why I don't use Blackboard all the way through consistently in all courses. So if we go back to there, and I can so present, and let's see if that works by going here. Right. Will you have this question thing on the next lectures? I think it's brilliant. This is a question is, do we continue using this tool? And there are some advantages and disadvantages of the Google tool. One is that it is anonymous, is both an advantage and a disadvantage. It doesn't give me moderating tools. So as an experience, it's very, very quick to get into. But as an experience, as a person giving a lecture, it doesn't give me all the tools I would like to have, right? So we have our own tool, which we'll look at also using, and that allows me to moderate and allows me to ask you questions more than just thumbs up and thumbs down. We can actually do some other things as well, right? So we do like it. I like having questions. We then have the problem with No Man's Sky is the hype was broken with promises, yes. And then we have a problem, right? Because, and this is a problem. Now, this is a problem, okay? The reason why this is a problem is that our community, as game developers, has gone through some very tricky times over its existence. Now, when I started out playing games when I was 10 years old, the games that we played were generally, I was playing Time Pilot and Pac-Man, and I played Pong, and I played the early games. I played platforming games, Donkey Kong, the original versions, right? I'm old enough to have been there through the first wave of games, right? So, and that was all just for fun. You then heard about strange games like Custer's Last Stand, where the player was required to rape an Indian girl to get past the second to last level. And rape as a required activity in a game is kind of, that's a bit sick, really. And as a kid, I never played that, right, because it never came up, because it was a shit game, right? So I just never saw it. You heard about it. And then as games developed, we started getting more and more realistic games, and you started to get, I remember when I was 14, there was a game that came out on the Apple IIe, which wasn't really a game, but it was called Bondage, right? And it used the hard drive of the Apple IIe, right? Because it was the floppy drive, which you would put a big floppy disk into, right? The big old ones, not the little cassette ones, but the actual proper big 5.25-inch floppy drive. And because it would spin up the drive and stop it and spin it up, it would go, and it had an animated GIF of sex, right? So the 14-year-old, that went through our lab, right? As, 14-year-old boys laughing at the machine making, because it didn't have speakers, because it was an Apple IIe, and we had the beep on the CPU, and that was it, right? And so people found ways of making rude and offensive material. And as 14-year-old boy, that was just funny. I was 14. So as we then develop into more horrific fighting games, you also have the pornography industry growing and also moving into games, and you have the whole Leisure Suit Larry games, and where you're going through, I don't know if any of you heard of Leisure Suit Larry. Yeah, there's a few. Woo! Okay, so yeah, there was a whole stream of games of kind of, generally being a bit odd and going out and trying to have as much sex as possible and drink as much alcohol as possible and those sort of things. So the game industry has done that. Now, games got a reputation as being a boys' activity, right? So something that teenage boys do. They generally had more time, right? So part of the reason why you have teenage boys playing these games is they have a lot more time to play these games. Now, That then seemed to lead to a feeling that games were about and for teenage boys, right? That they were designed by teenage men and men in their 20s, for teenage boys and men in their 20s. And so that became kind of an accepted norm. And because it was a closed community, the normal norms of society and the way you behave kind of changed in that group. And so vulgarity comes in because it's anonymous. You get offensive statements. You get a lot of sexism and racism and offense coming through. And then you get a bunch of women who are interested and had been playing games, and they come into these communities and they feel ostracized, like this does, right? This takes a woman's name and starts harassing her. So I had a lot of friends who played games as a who were my age, who would not use male or female. They wouldn't state their name. They wouldn't state their gender. They wouldn't use voice chat because you could identify them as a woman, and immediately they'd get harassed. So it drove them out of the industry. My girlfriend at university played computer games with me. We played text-based adventure games. Eventually, we had to stop because the university told us we were using up all of the bandwidth for the university in playing our text-based games, which seems strange, but, you know, this was the 90s, so we didn't have a lot of bandwidth. She played games, and she identified as a woman on those text-based games, and she got harassed. And that actually was a problem, right? Because she couldn't enjoy an activity we were playing together as a couple because she couldn't be my partner in that space. Right? Now, a few years ago, there was a media event related to something called Gamergate, and it kind of it was a debate around shining a light on initially the idea that the game media were also involved with game developers in various ways, and so you'd get kind of biased opinions on things, right? And so that's what the original kind of comment was trying to be. It very quickly turned into sexual harassment and aggressive behavior and violent threats. And I hate to use a Trump phrase, but there were violent threats on both sides, right? But the sexism was certainly from one side more than the other, right? But what happened is it became a fight. People were no longer, when they look at the experience, people were no longer engaging in a discussion and trying to work out what the problems were. They were just aggressively attacking each other and trying to bring other people down, right? So you get some of the media and females calling all gamers like neck-bearded basement dwellers who are all virgins and hateful and they should all fuck off back to their caves and they're not about gaming and we're going to block them from games and we're going to block them from everything and we're going to get rid of them because we don't need those people in gaming, right? Which is really kind of strong offensive thing to say, you are not allowed to enjoy your hobby, right? And so people reacted to that, but the reaction they were having was as a consequence of an earlier reaction, which was basically offensive shame, victim shaming, being intentionally offensive. Now, some people were saying, "Oh, you know, I was just trolling." Right? You can't handle a joke, right? There were some people who were making rape threats and doxing people, so releasing people's identities and saying, you know, I'm going to come around to your house and rape you and rape your children and then slaughter you in front of your children. And, you know, when the FBI did track down some of these people, because this is an illegal activity to make those threats, they said, oh, I didn't think she'd take it seriously. Right? Now, in New Zealand, my father is a educational psychologist, right? So he deals with abused children, suicidal children, a lot of sexual abuse. Now, my first girlfriend at high school, she was sexually abused by her grandfather multiple times. And she was starting to get older, and he started to abuse her younger sister. And so when she was 12, she would go back and voluntarily sleep with her grandfather to try and stop him sleeping with her younger sister. Right? Now, if you come from a life where that actually happens to you or people you care about, when people use that as a, it doesn't matter, they won't take it seriously insult, that's not fair, right? Because just because you don't take it seriously, just because it hasn't happened to you personally, doesn't mean that people you know might be hiding that. It may be, and given the stats around the world, a third of women are sexually abused, which means we have more than three women in this room. So it's very likely that at least some of the people in this room have been sexually abused. So when you talk about sexual abuse, we talk about anal, oral, sexual activity, unwanted sexual activity, you're not talking about some theoretical, unusual thing that doesn't matter because it's not serious. Right? Because no, it hasn't potentially happened to you. May not have happened to anyone in your family. But it's happened to people I know, and it happened to people I care about. And so when you use language like this, and when you treat it as a joke, when you treat it as irrelevant and just for fun and not a problem, that diminishes the serious issue that society has about shaming women, about treating this as just a joke, right? I'm not offended by this, right? Because I know that this happens, right? It upsets me because I personally have had to deal with people I love dealing with this sort of shit, right? So it's not that I'm offended, because, you know, I've heard far worse than this, right? I've sat through counseling sessions with my girlfriend. I listened to my father talk about sexual abuse. One case he talked about was a girl who was abused by her priest in confessional. And when she told her parents, they said, stop blaspheming, and sent her back to the priest, who then abused her again. Right? That's the sort of shit my dad dealt with regularly. So although I know far worse than this, and I can talk about far worse than this, right? This is just kind of, you know, ridiculously craziness, right? It's still not free of all issues. Right? So just because you're anonymous, just because you can be offensive or try to be offensive, doesn't mean that, you know, everyone who's listening is going to be comfortable with what you say. Right? So in a response to this, one response would be, and a response the university would completely support me in, would be completely never using an anonymous system ever again. Right? And say, yes, this earlier question, which was a fantastic question, which is, hey, this system is really great. Can we use it again? Oh, where did that go? So the... I just pressed space and everything disappeared. It seems to have disappeared the questions. Right, so with questions, this is a really useful tool. Should we use it again? Yes, it is a really useful tool. It's a really useful tool if you use it well, right? But if people are going to attack other people in the class, right? And I'd far rather you attacked me, right? If you want to talk about someone and be as offensive as you can, use my name, right? I've had far worse discussed with me than anything you guys can come up with. But don't use each other's names. Don't attack people you don't know, right? Attack me. I'm the guy up the front, right? I'm all up for it. I'm the one who said I can't be offended. So don't use other people's names. Use my name. I'm fine with that. You want to offend someone? Try offending me. Don't try and offend other people in the class. That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Ah, right. So this is so why would you share it with 4chan? Okay. Hmm? For that effect. Okay, so interesting. That actually makes things a bit better because it means that you guys aren't that guy, but someone decided that they wanted to experiment and see if they could draw the slut-shaming community into this classroom, right? And expose everybody to that community. Right? I would rather not have that community associated with this classroom, right? So thank you for explaining the 4chan leak. I hadn't... All right. Okay. Excellent. So I'm very glad that there is an explanation, because I was kind of surprised that you guys would generate that much hate that quickly, right? I mean, there might be two or three, and there might be some on the stream, but that was a lot of comments and a lot very fast, right? So so as a channel for hate, 4chan is a good place to go if you want to bathe someone in hate. That's a stupid thing to do, right? And I don't want to see that happen again. And if you want to attack anybody, yeah, please, attack me. I'm the person who is here and up the front, right? And that should be... I'm the one who takes responsibility for saying I'm not offended. Okay? So, but we will talk about the Game at Gate thing again, I'm sure, during your degree. The issue with gender and the issue with games and identity... Over the weekend, I did my siege jam over the weekend where I made two medieval siege weapons. The guy I was making it with said, you know, he was a bit concerned when he saw my tagline because he has a lot of fights with his 15-year-old son over games. And he said, aren't you ashamed of yourself making games? He's kind of, whoa, okay, what do you mean? Because you know, you're an industry that's trying to get kids addicted to games and make them spend money. Just like the gambling industry. Okay, wait, no, that's not me. I want to make good games and games that are fun. And he said, yeah, no, but you have to make them pay, don't you? And I said, well, we actually make quite a lot of educational games that are for free that, you know, hospitals pay us because they help kids get better. And he said, yeah, no, but that's only some of the games. The other games are there to make money and you're trying to make money out of kids. And so he was serious that in his home he had turned off the internet completely so his 15-year-old son couldn't play any games. So they had no TV, no internet, nothing in the home, just because it was causing him so much problems. And then I come along as a game developer and go, hey, look at this, I'm a game developer. And so I had some interesting discussion over the weekend about should I be ashamed of who I am because I make games. My response is no, I probably shouldn't be, right? Because the games I make aren't like that, but it does raise the question. I need you guys, right? When you leave here, kind of be responsible citizens, right? Opening up to 4chan is a challenge, because if you just keep it within the community here, then we can manage that. Once you kind of expose it to the rest of the community, then we get like issues of borders and control, right? So, as game developers, when you create these interest curves, you can try and do the Skinner box thing of saying, okay, how do I keep somebody and then like keep them engaged, keep them spending all the time, right? So I draw these interest curves, not because they make a good story, just because I'm trying to find a way of extracting as much money out of my client, out of my audience as possible. So there is a bunch of mobile games that... Interestingly, the difference between American games and European games, one of the differences that for Americans, they call there's something called a whale. Have you heard of the phrase whale? Yeah. A whale in a mobile game or a micropayment game is someone who spends, I think currently, over $1,000 a month on the game. And the goal of American mobile development companies is to get as many whales as possible and get as much of their money as possible. Yes. So they use the term whale to discuss how they get these whales to come in and spend tens of thousands of dollars a month on their game. Europeans say, no, no, but that would be terrible because they'll, like, you know, they'll run out of money, they've got an addiction, this will be bad for themselves and their family and their society. And you, and like Europe in general, has social caring as something it does, right? America tends to think you're on your own, right? And so I would much rather teach in a European classroom where at least I hopefully mostly have people in here who will think about each other when they think about the interest curves. And when they project with empathy and with imagination rather than project with kind of hate and imagination, right? Because that's the wrong way to go for what I want to be teaching and what I want you guys to leave the course with. Okay? So, with that, I need to see if I can get someone who wants to try and submit their assignment. Has anybody tried to submit their assignment in Blackboard? Has anybody succeeded in Blackboard? Right, okay. So, you saw a link once and it's gone. Okay, so what are we going to do is I will try and make sure I follow through with this with you guys to make sure we've got everything set up and that you guys can submit. So if I go to him and this, right. So what I see is that under the coursework, we have assignment one. And under assignment one, I have this changing in experience. Do you guys see that? Does anybody see that when they go there? Because I can try and go to my view and under coursework and under assignment one, I don't get that. That's what you guys get? Okay. So I think, so I have to try and work out, so I turn that off, right? Exit preview. Because my user is not assigned up for that assignment. So I believe what we need to do is I need to go in here, and you should, hopefully once we go in here, I can edit. All right, so I'm glad nobody's currently seeing that, because that's at least consistent. So due date, I'd put it at 11:55 p.m. Possible points, it's 5 points because it's out of 10%, but that's because I don't give, so half points and things. But group submission, and these are all the groups. So I'll select all and items to select, and I think I can move them there, I'm hoping. And do you guys want a single attempt or multiple attempts? Okay. Maximum attempts? If it takes you more than 10, that's going to be a problem. And see, the thing is, it tries, supposedly there's an auto grading. That's not auto grading. I'm going to read you what you write. So I'll just go the score attempts is the last one. And we've delegated grading, hopefully in a reasonably sensible way. Make available, and I should go submit, and we'll see if that now, hopefully, fingers crossed, did anybody go online and can anybody see it now? I believe to see it, you have to be assigned to a group. You can see it now! Woohoo! We have progress. Now, when you click on it, let's see if I go to preview, I still don't see it in preview, you see, so that's one of the problems I have, is that in here, I can't see it, so I can't progress with it. But I maybe if I go to there and I sign up to group 18, is anyone in group? Oh, there's someone in group 18. There's someone everywhere. Okay, I'll sign up to group 18. I'm in group 18, yay. So now when I go to my coursework, I should be able to see assignment one. Aha! So that should be consistent with what you have seen before, is what I put up. All right. Now, if I click in it, it says possible points due September 14th. Submission is a whole group. Right, so assignment submission. I can either write it as text submission or upload a single file. Now, something they wanted us to remind you of it's only a single file. So if you want to submit more than one file, you have to zip them together into a single file because your file will overwrite the previous file. Right? So don't try and submit, because I can't grade them as parts and things. Yep. PDF is the preferred format. So PDF, or you can write the submission directly in Blackboard. I would not suggest this. You might lose a token, and then all your work will disappear. I don't trust it to do that. Write it somewhere else. You could pin it, you copy and paste it in, or use a PDF and upload it. And then apparently you can add comments. I'll go cancel because I don't want to submit the assignment on behalf of the other person in my preview group. So now I think if I exit preview, it'll ask me, do I delete the person? Oh, I've already set that to true. Okay, so hopefully now you should see it. You should see how to submit. And you guys, so to submit, you have to be part of the group. And you have to be part of the group before it gets submitted or your name won't be attached to that group. One person submits on behalf of the group. Are you in a group currently? Right. You can't find it. Okay, so what we'll do now is we'll deal with people who can't sign in and can't be part of a group. But the rest of you, if you can see it, then you should be able to submit before Thursday night. And we'll be starting to look at some more work on interest curves and the next assignment in the tutorial on Friday. Yes? It's in one of the announcements. Yep. So if you look at the announcements, there's a naming convention announcement. Okay.
Thank you.